Go ahead, Wayne. Matthew 27 today, and it's another one of those creepy, crawly, throughy, versey by versey studies where we are also, you're going to need to stick your finger over in John chapter 18, the very end of chapter 18. Because in Matthew's account, the Reader's Digest account, I call it, because Matthew's not real stuck on details. He's not even totally fastidious about the appropriate chronology of events. He has other issues that he's covering, and thank God we have four Gospels. John was the last one to write the Gospels, decades actually after the other three were written. And John was the last of the eyewitnesses of the disciples, and it's kind of interesting. I love John's gospel for lots of reasons. We're studying Matthew, but I love the detail that John brings out here, and so I'm going to insert it. We are right before the crucifixion. Last week we looked at trials and denials, trials before the fake high priest and a trial before the real high priest, and mockery of trials. Basically, the Jewish leaders wanted to kill Jesus. They just did not have the authority to do it. Now we're going to see Jesus before Pilate, the governor, the Roman governor. This was not a plum job to land. Pilate landed this job simply because he was in disgrace in Rome. So they gave him the most dirt-clod job that you could give to anybody. And he was under enormous pressure. He sort of, part of his problem was just really big ego, and he abused power everywhere he went. Rome, trying to distance themselves from him, sent him to what we call Palestine, before there was a nation Israel, called Israel. Sent him down to Jerusalem, and he waltzed into town with all pomp and swagger and just could not get out of his own way. He made blunder after blunder after blunder. There were three major rebellions under his rule. And finally, Tiberius, the Roman Caesar, sent the word, okay, four strikes, you're out, buddy. You bring order to these people, you keep order, or you're out of here. And when Tiberius said, you're out of here, he didn't mean you go look for another job. He meant look for another head. You are a dead man. So Pilate is under enormous pressure. These are hard people to rule. Rome realized that when they came in to occupy Israel. They realized that we're going to have to let them have a sense that they still have some autonomy. They gave them an enormous amount of freedom. They allowed them to keep most of their religious government. Remember, Israel was used to being a theocracy. So they allowed them to have their religious superstructure in place, pretty much. We saw last week that the Romans deposed the real high priest, his name was Annas, because he was a punk. He just said, no way, nobody's going to tell me what to do. Our God said that the scepter would never depart from evil, from Israel, from the throne of David, until Messiah comes and, you know, over my dead body. So what the Romans did is they just pushed him out of the way and put a different high priest in who would be more cooperative. We're calling our study today Pilate Errors, because Pilate made some big ones. The reason I want to read John's account as well is there are some things in here, there are some interaction between Jesus and Pilate, personal private conversation, that just make me love him. They make you wonder. I don't know if you've noticed this so far as we've gone chapter by chapter, but it really looks more like Jesus is in control of events than the mobs and the crowds and the people that hate him. And I love the interaction that he has with Pilate. It's going to take a while to read through the passage that I want. Don't lose heart. We do have some comments to make. We stopped last week. We read all the way into chapter 27, and we saw that while Peter Peter, the guy who swore he would never disown Jesus. While Peter was disowning Jesus, Judas, who only had really one third of the betrayals that Peter had, if you want to, you know, do the math, Judas repented with remorse, gave the money back, said, I've betrayed innocent blood. But he just could not buy that he was could ever be forgiven. And in despair, he committed suicide. And we pointed out last week, what was the difference between Judas and Peter? Peter denied the Lord three times. Would Judas have been forgiven? Absolutely. Jesus was on the way to the cross to die for Judas's sins, just like he was on the way to the cross to die for Peter's sins. What was the difference between those two? Could have been humility and pride. It could have been just faith. Nothing more or less than somebody saying, I'm too bad, even God can't save me, versus somebody that said, I'm bad, but if anybody could save me, it would be Jesus. So we went a little ways. We went all the way to verse 11 of chapter 27. But I want to back up to verse 1 and just read the first few verses to set the stage. Then we will jump down to verse 11 and read Matthew's incredibly short account of what John takes almost a whole chapter to talk about. And we'll flip over to John. So that's where we're going. Strap yourselves in. Early in the morning, all of the chief priests and the elders of the people came to the decision to put Jesus to death. They bound him and led him away and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. And then we can skip over the whole thing about Judas because we looked at that last week. So Judas does his thing. And then verse 11 in Matthew says, meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, are you the king of the Jews? The statement in the Greek text is that he was surprised. He expected, for somebody that caused all this hubbub, he expected a more kingly presence. Yes, it is as you say, Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. And Pilate asked him, don't you hear the testimony that they're bringing against you? But Jesus made no reply. Boy, my life would be different if I could say Bob made no reply. I usually just make it worse. But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Flip over to John 18, because we will look at what John records as happening next, and Matthew just gives us a little tiny bit. By the way, Pilate was expecting to be offered a bribe. He had Jesus before him in private. He was kind of surprised that the man was not even defending himself. And I love this interchange. I'd like you to notice how personal it is. This is not Jesus Christ Superstar, where, you know, the brave young rebel is raging against the machine, you know, and, you know, shaking his fist against authority. This is mano a mano. This is man to man, despite the illusion that one of them has the other's life in his hands. Jesus was led from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning. To avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. I have in the margins of my Bible, isn't legalism weird? These guys are about to kill an innocent man, but they want it to look good. And they could not celebrate the religious festivities if they were seen walking into the house of a Gentile. So Pilate came out to them and asked, what charges are you bringing against this man? These guys are politicians. If he were not a criminal, they replied, we would not have handed him over to you. Hello? Answer? Are you going to answer the question? Pilate said, take him yourselves then, and judge him by your own law. Here's the real reason that they had to bring him to the Romans. But we have no right to execute anyone, the Jews objected. And this, parenthetically, Matthew adds, or John adds, this happened so that the words that Jesus had spoken indicating the kind of death he was going to die would be fulfilled. In John's gospel, back in chapter 12, we won't go there, but back in chapter 12, Jesus described what his death was going to be like, and it was nothing like a Jewish execution. But it wasn't going to be a Jewish execution. It was going to be a Roman one. You might want to write in the margins, if you do such things, a reference to Psalm 22, which is a prophetic psalm. Hundreds of years before Roman execution by crucifixion was even invented, it's described in graphic detail hundreds of years before by David as a prophet in Psalm 22. Pretty remarkable. Pilate then went back inside the palace and summoned Jesus and asked him, now this is one-on-one, are you the king of the Jews? I love this. Jesus said, is that your own idea? Or did others talk to you about me? Pilate does not like being addressed that way. He's losing the whole I'm in control of your life authority deal. And he says, am I a Jew? Don't talk to me that way. I'm a Roman. It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you've done? And Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. The word of is a really important word in that sentence. My kingdom is not of this world in its origin. You have nothing to fear from me, Pilate. I'm not fomenting rebellion against Rome. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now, my kingdom is from another place. You are a king then, said Pilate. And Jesus answered, you're right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born. For this reason I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Mark this down. Underline it, highlight it, circle it, put little stars by it. It is still true. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me, Jesus said. That's one of those unavoidable statements that he makes. And Pilate, over his shoulder, as he's going back outside, flippantly replies, what is truth? And with this, he went out again to the Jews and said, I find no basis for a charge against them. In other words, no evidence, no charges, no Roman trial. Now flip back over to Matthew. Keep your finger in that place, because we'll be back there. And jump in at verse 15. Matthew 27. Now it was the governor's custom at the feast to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time they had a notorious prisoner named Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ? Because he knew it was out of envy that they had handed Jesus over to him. By the way, if you don't know this, the word Christ is the English translation of the Greek translation of the Hebrew word Messiah. So you could, Jesus who is called Messiah. I just got to sneak something in here. Bar Abbas, Aramaic name. The prefix bar means son of. Abba is the Aramaic word for daddy. So Barabbas means daddy's boy or son of the father. Sort of brings irony to verse 17, doesn't it? Which one do you want me to release? The son of the father who's the murderer? Or the son of the father who's Messiah? I love verse 19. It just, I carried this thought around with me for a couple of years when it looked like everybody but Jesus was driving my bus. when it looked like everybody in the world was making bad choices that affected my life, and I thought, I can't get through them. They won't listen to me. Listen to this little snippet. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, in other words, he's ruminating about waiting for the people to make their choice so he can make his judicial decision. Listen to what happened. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message. This would have been unprecedented for a woman to interrupt a legal proceedings to pass a personal note to her husband. The message, don't have anything to do with that innocent man, because I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. We'll talk about the significance of that. I think it's huge. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to have Jesus executed. To ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. Which of the two do you want me to release to you? Asked the governor. Barabbas, they answered. Well, what should I do then with Jesus, who's called Messiah? They all answered, crucify him. Why? What crime has he committed? Asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, crucify him. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting. Remember, Pilate is on a tightrope here. He took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. I'm innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. And all, that was a gesture, public gesture of, okay, I did my best. He didn't do his best, but he's just saying he did. All the people answered, let his blood be on us and on our children. Boy, that's a haunting quote. You remember a few chapters earlier, they said, you're trying to make us guilty of this man's blood. How unfair and intolerant. And now here they're asking for it. Let it be on our head. And then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. I can't really read this whole thing without the images from the movie Passion of the Christ being before me. Just incredibly accurate. But they've done a new version of it to edit out all of the blood, which really makes me mad. You're going to alter history because it makes people squeamish to see the way that it really was. That's not honest. It was supposed to be bloody. It was a brutal thing that happened. Flip back over to John chapter 19. We'll read a few verses into this. I'm not sure how far we'll get today, but I just want to keep the context. Pilate took Jesus, had him flogged. Not an ordinary part of crucifixion. In fact, when prisoners were flogged, some of them didn't even make it through the flogging. If you saw that scene in Passion of the Christ with that what the British Navy called the Cat of Nine Tails, which is a mini... Thank you. You're already there, so my brain doesn't need to explain it to you. But remember when the guard took that flail and he hit the table and the little claws on that table pulled chunks of the wood out, and then that went on to Jesus' back and pulled chunks of his back out? That is absolutely historically accurate. The most poignant scene of the flogging to me was that when they dragged Jesus out of there, the whole courtyard was filled with blood, just covered with blood everywhere. Mel Gibson said the reason that he made that movie was when he read the account, and then he saw the scriptures in Isaiah that said, by his stripes, we are healed. He was wounded for our transgressions. If you remember, if you saw that movie, the very first scripture in the beginning and the last scripture at the end said, by his stripes we're healed. Why have him flogged? Well, Pilate's political reason was hoping that if he just could have him bloody enough and put him before the people, he wouldn't have to actually go through a crucifixion. Didn't work. We'll get we'll get there next week. He took him out and had him flogged. Let's flip back to the beginning. Where, Bob? Where was the beginning? Back in Matthew 27. And let's look at this. Look at this. I'm not in a hurry to get through this. I want to squeeze all the juice out of this that I can. Until a couple of decades ago, and I realize that in our culture, with our short memories, decades don't seem very long. But in the Middle East, you'll see this when we go to Israel. When we go to Israel, you're trying to cover history that covers 9 or 10,000 years. And so when they talk about a city that was here, they'll talk about 8 cities that were there, and they're on top of each other over successive generations. For several thousand years, people who mocked the Bible scoffed over the story of Pilate because they could find no historical record of a person in authority named Pilate. So they said, oh, you know, you just made this up. But you remember when we were in Caesarea Maritime, the palatial resort? Pilate had a house there. And a couple of decades ago, they found a stone from that era under the rubble saying this is the house of Pontius Pilate. So that sort of shut up the scoffers until they found something else to scoff about. Pilate normally resided in Caesarea Maritime, and if you could see Caesarea Maritime, and some of you will when we go in March, I would rather hang out there than a lot of places in Maine, actually. Beautiful seaside place, and I love those little Solero ice cream bars that you can get just around the corner from the beach. Probably they weren't there in those days, but by the way, we will stand on the stones in the room where Jesus was flogged. One of the places they've preserved all of this time. It's pretty amazing. Pilate resided in Caesarea. He didn't come to Jerusalem unless he had to. Shortly after the events in this story, because everything just went horribly awry, Pilate committed suicide. He was such a loser by Roman standards that they pretty much obliterated his name. Only a few Roman historians even cover it. Had they not found in the governor's palace in Caesarea Maritime a stone with his name on it, some people might have thought he never existed. The Christians just made it up in their fairy tale. Pilate had to be in Jerusalem at this time. No Roman governor wanted to be in Jerusalem during the Feast of the Passover. There were almost 3 million Jews from all over the world crowded into that place. And you remember when we were inside that city wall, can you imagine 3 million people crowded into there? Interesting, 3 million people show up in town, and not only do they hate the Romans, they hate each other. There are rival factions. It was absolutely a riot waiting to happen. Pilate is forced to have to be there. He wants to unload this hot potato as fast as he can. You have the Jews, the Jewish leaders who want to kill Jesus. We saw it at the very beginning of Matthew chapter 27. They'd already made up their mind they're going to kill him. Here's the interesting thing about how God's promises come true. How can God say something is going to happen hundreds of years in the future and still give people a free will? How can he do that? Well, those questions are answered in this passage, and it's important. It's important for you to consider and for me to consider, because God's made us promises that a lot of times do not look like they could come true. In fact, they look like the people who are driving the bus are going to make pretty darn sure they don't come true. If the Jewish leaders had been allowed to kill Jesus, they would have stoned him. It was the Jewish method of execution. It was their only one. It's very gruesome. You wonder why they picked that one. Well, because they could be personally involved. each guy could throw his own stone, and they started with the big stones, and they'd heave a big stone and hit the guy in the head and hopefully knock him down, and then they could pelt him to death. That's the Jewish method. They were mad at Rome because they weren't allowed to do that. They were allowed all kinds of autonomy. You can virtually have your high priestly rule, your Sanhedrin, all of this stuff could be intact, but we will not allow you to enforce the death penalty. They were mad about that. How would you feel being ruled by a bunch of religious leaders that were mad because they couldn't kill people? Don't laugh. I saw that in the newspaper about a month ago. Some religious nut in the Damascata signed his name to a letter and said, you know, the problem with our country is they don't let us kill sinners anymore. And I just thought, oh, Lord. You know, a wacko like that will get all the publicity that he wants. The devil will see to that. So they're mad at Rome because they don't have the power to kill people. They're also mad at God because way back when the Davidic line was set up, God made a promise, and he said there will always be on David's throne, the scepter will never pass from David's throne until Messiah comes. And when the Romans came in and said, okay, you can do just about anything, but you can't do this, you can't do that, and you can't kill people, they looked at that as being the scepter has passed. If somebody else can tell us as a government that we can't kill people anymore, then God didn't keep his promise. And they were mad at God. But Messiah had come, hadn't he? I mean, God did keep his promise. They just refused to see that Jesus was Messiah. I think that's kind of an interesting little note.